My name's Harriet, and I'm an addict. Hello! Are there any other addicts here? Yay! I decided to check how many days I've been clean and sober this morning, and it's 6,906. Woo! One day at a time. And I want to share with you what's happened in my day so far. I woke up when the alarm went off and I had a clear head. My kids were fast asleep, both of them. My dog was curled up on top of me, snoring like she normally does and dreaming. I had clean clothes to put on this morning. There was plenty of food for breakfast. I got to my haircut on time. I got here on time. I prayed most of the way here. My kids are being looked after. Everything is organized. I have not done anything today that I regret yet. And I know that I will get to bed tonight without taking a drink or a drug in my system, without doing anything that's going to make me feel uncomfortable about who I am as a person, about what I bring to the world. Absolutely nothing. I know I'm going to go to bed with with peace of mind, with calm in my heart. And that is recovery. Because when I first came in, there were times when I couldn't wash my hair for a month because I just couldn't get my shit together to do that. There was never food in the fridge. There was never clean clothes. I never woke up on time. I would either not set the alarm or it would go off and I'd wake up and then I'd be like, ah, fuck it. No, I don't need to show up for this thing that I said I would show up for. I was constantly letting people down. I was constantly letting myself down. And as a result of that, I hated myself. I don't know if anybody here can identify with having a really loud, painful voice in your head that tells you how useless and rubbish and stupid and horrible you are. But I had a very loud one of those. And even as a young child, I never felt good enough. I never felt like a human being who had anything to offer the world. And I felt like, I don't know if anybody here has ever felt this way too, but I felt as though there was a day that I'd missed early on at school where they told you how life worked. And I'd just been sick that day or that week, and I had no idea how to do life, and everyone else did. And I was frightened. I was really frightened about what people thought about me. I was frightened about not looking right. I was frightened about absolutely every single thing. It was so busy in my head the entire time. It was just this constant negative chatter. And, you know, I could tell you sob stories about my childhood, but I don't think that that is necessary. But to share in a really general way, there was a sense of feeling abandoned and a sense of feeling unsafe and a sense that if I reached out and I told the people who were supposed to care for me and love me what I needed and how I felt, that they would abandon me, shame me, and ignore me and walk away. And so I learned from a very early age, way before I picked up a drink or a drug, that I had to keep my emotions in order to stay safe. And later on, when I was a teenager, and I started, started branching out beyond my family and friends, the very first time I ever took a drink or a drug, it was like somebody had turned the lights on and turned the volume down at the same time. It was like, ah, this is how life is supposed to be. I can function now. And for me, I drank and I used to get away from the pain of being clean and sober. Drinking and drugs were my solution. They weren't to start with, well, I don't know, they weren't necessarily my problem. Although I will share with you a story about my very first drink, which is that I was at school and I desperately wanted to be part of the cool crowd. And I was never, ever part of the cool crowd, ever. although I've made my own cool crowd now. I think we're the cool crowd, right? We're the cool crowd. Does anyone else think we're the cool crowd? Yes! Right, so this girl who was, she was part of the cool crowd, and she had persuaded me to smuggle in a bottle of martini into school. And I don't know how, at the time, I persuaded my mother to buy me a bottle of martini, age 14, so I could take it to school. Slightly lunatic, but anyhow, I managed to do it. And this girl and I sat down, and she poured us each a martini and mixed it with lemonade. There wasn't very much in it. And she sat there and she took a few sips, and I sat there and I took a few sips, and it hit me straight away. And so I downed the entire glass. And then I downed the entire bottle while she was still on her first martini and lemonade. And I became paralytically drunk very fast, as you would do if you were a 14-year-old girl who's never touched anything in their life. And we went together to meet up with the cool crowd. And these people that I was frightened of, and something that I used to do, and very occasionally I do now too, is that if I'm really nervous, I can inappropriately giggle. And I was blind drunk at this point, and I started inappropriately giggling around the cool crowd, all these cool girls that I really desperately, more than anything, wanted to be liked and accepted by. And do you know what happened? I wet myself in my school uniform. I was never part of the cool crowd. Again, or ever. And that was my first ever drink. And it was downhill from there. I've never been able to have one of anything. To this day, I know that if I open the box of Jaffa cakes, there's not going to be any left. And it was always like that for me as well with drink and drugs. Once I've had one, that's it. I'm off. And really, a combination of having a very loud voice in my head telling me how awful and useless I was, having found a solution that would turn that off, and not feeling safe at home and as though I could share anything and it be responded to appropriately, was a fairly deadly combination. And when I was 16 years old, I was groomed. I was groomed by a much older man. And he saw in me, a vulnerable, malleable, persuadable young girl. And an awful lot of extremely traumatic things happened in that relationship. It was abusive on every single level. And here's the thing, my world on the outside started to match how I felt on the inside. That voice in my head that told me how useless, stupid, undeserving of love, how nobody would like me, it just became reinforced by how I was being treated on the outside. And you know what? I didn't have any love for myself at all. I treated myself like total crap. I allowed other people to treat me like crap. And in terms of my behavior and how I was operating in the world, I'm very sure I wasn't particularly bringing anything good into the world. I was bringing heartache, worry, dishonesty, all these kinds of things. I just wasn't bringing it. And so it's not surprising, is it? When you think about that, you know, I'm treating myself like crap. Other people are treating me like crap. And I didn't feel able to do anything about it. And then I was bringing crap into the world. Guess what? I felt crap about myself. And I had a really good solution, which was drink, which was drugs. And it worked. Temporarily, it worked, and it helped to blot out all those feelings that I had, all those painful thoughts. It was like, I just have to get away from thinking and feeling how I think and feel about myself. And the moment that I woke up, if I went to sleep at all, it was so painful that I just needed to keep going. But because of the way that I've always responded to drink and drugs, which is that I can't stop, it was just this, you know, this runaway train. And I'm guessing that because you're sat here in this field, you might identify with that, even if our stories aren't exactly identical. And a little over 19 years ago, in the summer of 2002, something really big happened, really, really big, which was that I had a very bad accident. You can probably tell from my accent that I'm a little bit posh, right? So I'm not going to pretend I'm not a little bit posh, because I am a little bit posh, right? And that's one of the things recovery teaches me, is that I can just own that and go, woohoo, that's who I am. I was horse riding. Don't ever go horse riding on coke. Just don't. Horses respond to what's going on for you. And when you're on coke, I don't know about you, you lovely people, but for me, I would be extremely tense, extremely frightened, very kind of, oh, you know, like hold like this. So the horse mirrored that back to me and was like, oh, everything's wrong. Oh, God, you know, and I was trying to, anyway, it doesn't matter what I was doing on this horse. The bottom line is I fell off and smashed the back of my pelvis. I was very, very lucky because I could have broken my back. I was taken off in a helicopter, and I didn't know, there were a few days where I didn't know if I was ever going to walk again. And I had about 5 days to lie in hospital and stare at the ceiling and contemplate what had become of my life. To lie there as a, you know, I was 26 years old at that time, and to contemplate and say, is this what I want? No. And at that point, I made a decision that things needed to change, but I had no tools whatsoever. And I was very lucky, as I said. I came out of hospital. I was hobbling around on crutches. I needed a lot of physio. But it was that moment of clarity of, like, all the other accidents, the car crashes, the assaults, the, I don't know, all the bad things that had happened, I had always thought, why is this crap always happening to me? I'm a victim. I was very much playing the victim. Why does this keep happening to me? Poor me. I better have another drink. I better have some more drugs. My life is terrible. I am terrible. It's just further confirmation that I'm this useless, horrible person who doesn't deserve good things. But that day, I made a decision. But I couldn't actually, and I knew categorically that the fact that I had been on a lot of coke that day and had been for several weeks, constantly using whatever I could get hold of, I knew that had been a major contributing factor to the accident. I just knew it. And for the first time ever, I had that moment of honesty where I went, it's got to stop. The drugs are the problem, and it's got to stop. And I started to want to live. I hadn't wanted to live before. I would have not really cared whether I'd lived or whether I'd died. And I did once overdose and turn blue, and when I was about 23. And, you know, back then I'd lost my mind. I'd lost, you know, a third or more of my body weight. I looked like a skeleton. I was paranoid. I was psychotic. I was hearing voices. I couldn't string a sentence together. I couldn't read. And I knew that wasn't who I was. And I no longer wanted that. I wanted to reject all of that and see if there was a different way. I became open to the idea that there might be a different way. So I just decided, and I don't know about you, if you'd ever decided you were going to stop, but had no program, had no one to talk to, no tools, nothing, right? So I came out of hospital, and I was taken back to my flat. It was a damp, dark basement flat in Kilburn. It was perfect for using, actually. And I was hobbling around on crutches, and a close girlfriend came to visit me, one of my best using buddies. And within about 3 minutes of her walking through the door, and I could barely walk, she goes, should we get some then? And without even thinking about it, I said, yes. Yes, of course, let's get some. Why wouldn't we get some? That's just what we do. And I found myself having, despite the fact that I'd had this major situation happen, despite the fact I'd made a decision, I was still using. And after she left that night, I sat there completely baffled, and I was watching television, and there was a program on. This was back before we all had about 50 million channels to choose from. It was on Channel 4, and I just had to watch whatever was on because there wasn't much choice back then. And it was a program about girls who were working on the streets who were drug addicts up north, in the north of England. And the way that they talked about their addiction and the way they talked about their feelings hit me in a way that nothing had ever hit me since. It was like being slapped around the face and punched in the heart, and it woke me up, and I just went, wow, that's me. I am that. And at the end, there was the number for, back then it was called the National Drugs Helpline. It wasn't called Frank or whatever it's called now. And I called the number and I said, I've got a problem, I need some help. And they gave me the number for the CA helpline, because I came in through CA. And that's what I thought I needed help with. And I got to my first meeting, and it was September 2002. And I didn't stay stopped right away, because I thought I only had a problem with coke. It took me about 10 days, actually, to realize it's everything, because I was going to quite a few meetings at that point and listening, but still using. And then it just clicked, and I just stopped. And I have not had a drink or a drug since the 1st of October 2002. And here I stand. And I want to share with you what I've done the last 6,906 days to stay clean and sober, because we can all get clean and sober, right? We can all get a day or a few hours under our belt, but how do you stay clean and sober? Well, one of the first things that I did was I clung on to it like my life depended on it. And you know what? I learned later on that my life did, in fact, depend on it. You know, that if I picked up, there was a good chance that I might never come back. And I went to as many meetings as possible. I talked shit in coffee shops with other newcomers afterwards. Dawn smiling at me, because there was, you know, the fellowship was small back then and we all knew each other, thank you. And slowly I started to put my life back together. Slowly. The early days and weeks, I could hold it together for short periods of time in a meeting or at work. And then the minute I left it, either of those scenarios where I felt I had to hold it together, I would just cry. I would just fall apart. And I did get a sponsor and start working the steps. I'm still in touch with this amazing lady. But I did not get a sponsor and start working the steps, because I thought they would change my life and keep me clean and sober and all these wonderful things. It was actually just because I wanted to fit in. And all the other newcomers who'd come in around the same time as me, there was a real group of us doing our 90 and 90. We were quite competitive with each other. They had got sponsors and they were working the steps. And our post-meeting, you know, coffee shop chit-chat had changed from euphoric recall and trying to outdo each other with the dreadful things we'd got up to and the dreadful consequences to, oh yeah, how are you getting on with your step three? And I no longer fitted in. The first place I ever felt like I fitted in, I stopped fitting in. So I thought, oh, I better get a sponsor and work the steps. And you know what? It doesn't matter what your motive is. Get a sponsor and work the steps. It was for me, and I promise it will be for you as well, the biggest act of love you will ever show yourself. The biggest act of love you will ever show yourself. And actually, that's what recovery is all about. It is about love. It is about shifting from a way of doing and being in life that's fear-based to one that is love-based in its simplest form. It's about showing yourself love, being kind and compassionate to yourself, being understanding. When you mess up, just say, oh, sorry, I messed up. It's about being kind and loving to others. It's about seeing what you can give rather than what you can take in life. And the things that I've learned in these rooms have kept me going through some incredibly amazing times, as well as some phenomenally dark times as well. Because I married the man that I met in my rock bottom. And by the time I was 10 years clean and sober, and we had two children together, I realized that I needed to leave that relationship. It wasn't as bad as the previous one with the guy I already told you about, but it wasn't great. Don't marry the person you meet in your rock bottom when you're only barely sober. I wasn't a good judge of character, and he'd fallen in love with the person I was then, I think. And I realized I'd need to leave, so I got divorced with two small children, completely retrained, started a new career, one that's much more about service than the previous one. And, you know, I could say everything was going amazingly after that. That was an incredibly difficult time. But some of the things that I learned that carried me through my divorce were things like keep your own side of the street clean. Don't play dirty. Act with integrity. And this is what the spiritual side of the program's about. And it says in the big book, when we straighten out spiritually, then we straighten out mentally and physically. And if you, when you straighten out spiritually, it just means know what your own moral code is and stick to it. Just get on your own side. That's it. Honor yourself. Know who you are and honor that person, which is actually just a being of love who wants to bring goodness into the world. That's it. Right? It doesn't need to be more complicated than that. And so I was able to get through my divorce from a place of integrity. And as I said, retrain, get my life going and help others, all of that kind of thing. And then I was very badly injured in a car accident 5 years ago. And I had to take a lot of advice from doctors. And I had to do what I was told. And I had to keep handing it over to all these powers that were greater than me. I had to keep handing it over to a force of love. And I also had to keep asking for help. And it's something that throughout my recovery, my ability to ask for help has carried me through. When I feel a bit mad, or when there's something massive going on in my life, like divorce or being badly injured, or I got through breast cancer 3 years ago as well, you know, by asking for help and by surrendering to a more loving, more caring force in my life than the one that I can ever be for myself. And I got through it all these things, as well as some amazing times as well. I've had so many incredible, amazing times. Even just yesterday, it was my older son's 15th birthday. He's never seen me drink or take drugs. He's a sober baby. And I was able to pay to take him out for lunch, and he got a present, and we laughed a lot. It was fantastic. The good times, the bad times, the challenging times, you can get through anything 1 minute at a time, 1 day at a time, 1 hour at a time, even sometimes one breath at a time. The person I texted first when I came round in ICU after 9 hours of surgery for breast cancer was one of my best recovery buddies who'd sent me a message saying, I think, you know, I'm guessing if you're reading this, you didn't die on the operating table. That was, like, really cheerful. Hope you're okay. So I just wrote back, I'm alive. I'm off my face on fentanyl. Right? Like, the first thing I did was grasp myself up and go with a recovery buddy who wrote back, lucky bastard. Yeah. But I got through so many things just by showing up with integrity, showing myself love, trying to bring love forward into the world and goodness and be of service. And what happens when you're a person of integrity in that way is that you have total peace of mind about yourself. There's nothing that your illness or your inner critic, whatever you want to call it, it's got nothing on you, because your behavior is your side of the street is completely clean. And as a result of that, other people are going to benefit as well. But if you only do it for yourself, just to keep that peace of mind so that there's nothing that your illness can go, well, why'd you say that? Why'd you do that? Why didn't you pay for the train ticket? Da, 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 da. All that stuff, that's the stuff that will eventually take you back out. So staying in that beautiful spiritual place, that place where you can be a being of love and light, is the way forward. And it will bring you so much self-respect, so much joy, so much happiness. And you, not only that, you will be able to get through anything. The promise of recovery is not that life will always be amazing and that they'll always have shoes in your size in the shop, unfortunately, and that you'll meet the partner of your dreams and everything will be amazing. The promise is, no matter what life throws at you, if you work this program, if you do what you're told, you find a higher power to live your life by, that you can get through anything without picking up. And that has been my experience, the 6,906 days at a time. And thank you. And for each of you here, I don't know what you have going on for you in your life right now, but I want to encourage each and every one of you here to drop into your hearts, to show yourself love, which throwing yourself at this program is showing yourself love, to be a beacon of love in your relationships, to stand up for yourself lovingly, and to bring great things into the world, to be of service. No smile, no act is too small to make a difference. Ooh, nearly fell off my shoes there. I was trying to say something really profound. I think my higher power is having a joke and telling me I should finish there. So with that, I would just want to say my name's Harriet, and I'm a grateful, recovering addict. Thank you.